Well, Shabbat Shalom, everyone.
Shabbat Shalom.
You know, we're in the middle of a series that I'm doing on what exactly is the good news for Jews. And as I continue reflecting and studying, the series is getting longer. So what started out as three messages actually may end up four, even five. We won't go beyond that. But today what I'd like to talk about is a follow-up on what we began to discuss last week. Last week, we talked about how tough life was in ancient Israel. It really was very difficult. People lived in endless insecurity, disease, rampant, all the different things. And this is not to say, by the way, that people were necessarily any less happy than we are. That's a very interesting question. Were people happier then, or are we happier now? I think it's too very, very difficult to answer that question. My intuition is that it depended on the individual then as now, and that it wasn't a matter primarily of the emotional state that people lived in vis-a-vis happiness, but nonetheless, life was really, really tough. I've asked myself, except for the possibility of meeting Yeshua, would I want to live back then? Would you?
Yes.
Yeah? You think so? Okay, well, there you go. I won't argue with it. I will say that back then, as today, we yearn for the fulfillment of the prophetic hope. We all have a sense internally that things aren't as they should be, and we yearn for the day when they will be better. This is something about being a human being, which is probably different than being a pooch, you know? A dog doesn't get up and go, man, dog's life. Bones, bones, bones. All I get is bones. No variety, you know what I mean? No, I don't think it's that way. Yeshua spoke of this coming day when he was at services in his hometown, and I'm going to read to you about that. He went to Nazareth, where he'd been brought up, and on the Shabbat, he went into the synagogue, as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. And unrolling it, he found the place where it is written, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And by the way, that is an allusion to the Yovel, that called in English the Jubilee. The great Jubilee, when everything goes back to normal. Okay? Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. And he began by saying to them, "Today this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." An amazing comment where he says that today the beginning of the Yovel begins in me. I mean, what a comment. Absolutely amazing. So he preached the good news to Jews, but what did the good news look like in specific terms? So today we're going to begin answering that question, but we're talking about three kinds of transformation, if you will, or this is a way to conceptualize it. Personal transformation. Transformation of communities, the synagogue, and the transformation of society. All of these things have to do with the very nature of the good news. Personally, speaking about individuals, and I'm speaking to a Jewish community here, not everyone's Jewish, but in a secondary but very meaningful sense, this will be applicable to you too. And essentially for us Jews, the meaning of the good news is to make us better Jews. Okay? To make us better Jews than we were before. Now, I want to give you an example from the Besorah. This is not the passage we read this morning. It's another passage from the book of Luke. But Yeshua was passing through town. There was a crowd with him. And he looked up in a tree, and there was a guy in the tree. Do you know who that was? Zacchaeus, right, is how we say that. Yeshua passed by, stopped the parade, and pointed up and said, "Zacchaeus, I'm having lunch at your house today." Zacchaeus got down. He was happy. He invited Yeshua to his house. Now, I should tell you about this guy. He was Jewish, but he was a tax collector. In other words, he was viewed as a flunky of the Roman government. The Roman government worked this way. They would not send citizens of Rome to collect taxes, but they would hire people of the local community, the local nationality that they had conquered, and they would say, "Look, you collect taxes for us, and if you do, we will let you keep, you can take four times as much as we're requiring of you. You'll be rich, and we'll be happy, because we'll have money to run the empire. It's a win-win." Of course, the only thing was that it also meant that people would hate you because you would be viewed as a collaborator with the Romans. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He's gone to be the guest of a sinner, a Roman flunky, a sellout, a no-goodnik, who lives rich because he forces us to pay four times the amount of taxes that we would normally have to pay." But Zacchaeus stood up during the meal and said, "Look, Lord, look, sir, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I've cheated anyone out of anything, I will pay him back four times the amount." There's that four times idea. You know, the Romans will let him take four times as much. And if I've cheated anybody, I'm going to give back four times as much. I'm going to make a giant contribution. I'm going to give half of this beautiful house, the boat in the back, the condo in Florida, and my Ivory Connect collection, and I am going to give that to the poor. And Yeshua said to him, "Today, salvation has come to this house because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save that which is lost." Now, what do we have here? What is the nature of the good news? The nature of the good news for Jews has to do with transformation. It has to do with not being the same person that we were before. And that is much, not the totality, it's not all there is, but it is a major component of the good news. The attempt, the quest, the journey to be a better Jew than we were before. And we mean that in the most holistic sense. Not only knowing more Hebrew, that's good and important, but to become more of a mensch than we were before. And we'll describe some of those qualities. Now, in my own case, when Sue and I were living in Chicago, and we had to leave for various reasons, having nothing to do with us personally, but we needed to leave. And when I was there, I was working for a small Messianic Jewish organization. And my job was to set up speaking engagements for the staff, right? Set up speaking, and I was good at it. I was real good at it. I set up 200 speaking engagements and other organizations. Wherever they call someone to speak, we would got their book first. So I liked the work. And I did music and did some other things. But when I had the opportunity to move out of that world, and Sue can verify this because I said it back then, in fact I've said it for years, I wanted to become the leader of a congregation because, and I'll quote myself from back then, I wanted to find out what kind of mensch I was. Because what I discovered is going around and setting up speaking engagements and speaking in different places, and this is to cast no aspersions on Greg. He is going to lead our choir practice today. He's a great guy. You want to get to know him. And he speaks in different places, so absolutely no aspersions. But I will tell you this. When you're in one place, week after week, month after month, year after year, you find out what kind of human being you are. You follow what I'm saying about that? There's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. When I used to go around and speak in all these different places, they always thought I was hot stuff. And the danger of being an itinerant speaker is you can start believing it. And you don't want to do that, you see? Because you're new and fresh and everyone thinks you're so terrific. But when you're with the same group of people, you find out your foibles, your weaknesses, your fears. You have to overcome things. You have to love people who, under normal circumstances, you might never know. This is not just for me and for spiritual leaders. This is true for you. And it is one of the main arguments why the Besora can only, in its full sense, become actualized in our life in community. Do you believe that? I think you do. I think many of you do. Because it is the truth. It is in the crucible of shared relationship, the intimacy of religious worship, the intimacy of bringing food, of being with people week after week, month after month, year after year, that you look back and go, you know, I've changed. And that is what it's supposed to be all about. Now, there's more to the Besora. It starts with the decision. I remember that decision I made, and August this year it'll be 45 years. And that was the decision to surrender to Yeshua and to begin that process of transformation. But it is transformation that is a major element of what it means to be a Messianic Jew. What is the good news for Jews? It's transformation with Messiah at the center, his Ruach helping us week in, week after to become more of the mensch he would have us be. One more aspect, and that is the good news for Jews means transformation of the synagogue community. Now we're moving from the individual, and now we're talking a little bit broader range of things. We're talking about the community. You see, the community is should be the place of healing. Thank God for our healing seminars. People are praying for healing. Healings are occurring. Not the biggies that we want to see. So I want to see cancer healed. Isn't that what you want? That's what we want to see. We want to see people come back and go, you know, the doctor just is striking. He's just shaking his head. He doesn't know how it happened. We want cancer. We haven't seen that level of God's activity yet. I pray that it will come about. We're asking God for it. I think we just have to keep pressing it and asking. But community, mutual care. What's a community for? When people are in a jam and they need a few bucks, we help them out. We do it all the time. And we need to do it more. Prayer, joy, connecting, learning to how to be a mensch with people you'd not normally know. I mentioned it before, but it's what being in a community is all about. It's also learning, and again, I kind of touched on this, it's learning to become vulnerable about our sins and struggles. Because we collectively live in the acceptance of God purchased by the crucified one. And this is a very important point. It's not only a matter of moral reclamation. Not only a matter of deciding to be good. There's another dimension. And that is when we collectively as a community live out of that sense of the magnificence of a real historic atonement made in history. Really, truly. When we believe that to be the case. When we believe that when Yeshua was writhing on that execution stake and then he said, "It is finished," and he died. That plus the reality of his resurrection is so quintessentially important because it means that his love and acceptance is expressed to us in this magnificent way, meaning he was willing to pay the price for all that we as a human race, as a people, Israel, as individuals, do wrong. And when you get a hold of forgiveness, when you get a hold of that reality, so it's not only just a distant doctrine, but a living reality, when you see his smile because you've embraced him and in him have received this forgiveness, touched upon and intimated by the Yom Kippur liturgy, but made concrete in its fullest sense on Yom Kippur, or rather through Yeshua's atonement, then you begin a process of getting real about yourself at a new level. Because you don't have to endlessly justify your existence by proving that you're so great. And frankly, a lot of you are great, and I think there's a lot of really great people. But relatively speaking, in another sense, we're not so great. We're not that great. If you look at your motivational mix and twist a few things around and ask, would I be so good if I wasn't paid to be good? Would I be so good if she wasn't nice to me all the time? Well, it doesn't take too long to realize that we all have feet of clay and we're not all that great. We're not terrible, but not all that great. But Yeshua paid the price. And out of that, out of that reality, I'm repeating myself, we live with a sense of realism about who we are because we're not afraid to, because we have been accepted. We have been accepted by the God of Israel. I'll tell you quite frankly, it was 45 years ago. I remember it like it was yesterday. It was a beautiful day, very much like today, but a little breezier, a little lower humidity. And I was sitting on a porch of a hotel in Ocean City, New Jersey. I was with my friend John Fisher, who was just with this past week. And I was asking him questions about surrendering to Yeshua. And the last question I asked him was, if I believe in Yeshua, am I going to have to give up trombone? You've heard that before from me. And he said, I don't know what God will take out of your life, but whatever he takes out, he'll put something better back that's better. And I thought it was a great answer, and I was disarmed. And I said, okay, I'm going to do it. Do it. Well, do it, meaning I was going to just talk to God about this. I shut my eyes, I remember very vividly, very distinctly, I shut my eyes, and I said, God, I don't remember what I said exactly. Really, I don't. But the sentiment I remember, Yeshua, I believe in you. I want you to forgive me. I want you. Words to that effect. Wasn't theologically sophisticated, that I know from theology back then. But I remember the feeling I had of just a complete release. It was like something had changed radically, dramatically. Except for a brief period of miserable period. I was so unhappy back in college doing the bad stuff again, and I was miserable because I knew the hound of heaven was after me, and then I got back on the ball, and here we are. Now again, second, I got kids here, second generation, it isn't necessarily exactly like this. When you grow up in a home, and this is the way it should be, grow up in a home where these things are taught, you may not have that climactic moment. You know, I was a bank robber, a drug addict, and a terrorist. And all of a sudden, I was in the back of a taxi cab and saw a vision of Yeshua. That isn't the normative thing. The normative thing is to grow up and love him your whole life and just grow and grow and grow. But for first-generation people, it's more that way. Now, transformation of a community, transformation of us. This is part of what it's all about. But next time, 2 weeks, I want to talk with you about good news for Jews, the transformation of society with Yeshua's values at the center. It's very, very important and often neglected. The transformation, the meaning of the good news is not meant just for us and our community with a kind of narcissistic spirituality that doesn't look outside of the four walls of our lives. Rather, there is a huge implication for how we're supposed to interact with the larger world, and I will save that for next time. You all come back now, you hear, as Joe Clampett said? I will continue this 2 weeks from today. Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Shabbat Shalom.